Where Melisandre thinks to find a sleeping dragon, no one is quite sure. It's nonsense. Mance's blood is no more royal than mine own. He has never worn a crown nor sat a throne. He's a brigand, nothing more. There's no power in brigand's blood. The raven looked up from the floor. Blood! It screamed. John paid no mind. I am sending Gilly away.
Oh,
Sam bobbed his head. Well, that's good, my lord. It would be the best thing for her to go somewhere warm and safe, well away from the wall and the fighting. Her and the boy. We will need to find another wet nurse for his milk, brother. Goat's milk might serve until you do. It's better for a babe than cow's milk. Sam had read that somewhere. He shifted in his seat. My lord, when I was looking through the annals, I came on another boy commander, 400 years before the conquest. Osric Stark was 10 when he was chosen, but he served for 60 years. That's 4, my lord. You're not even close to being the youngest ever chosen. You're 5th youngest so far. The younger 4 all being sons, brothers, or bastards of the king in the north. Tell me something useful. Tell me of our enemy. The others. Sam licked his lips. They are mentioned in the annals, though not as often as I would have thought. The annals I've found and looked at, that is. There's more I haven't found, I know. Some of the older books are falling to pieces. The pages crumble when I try and turn them. And the really old books, either they have crumbled all away, or they are buried somewhere that I haven't looked yet, or... Well, it could be that there are no such books, and never were. The oldest histories we have were written after the Andals came to Westeros. The first men only left us runes on rocks, so everything we think we know about the Age of Heroes and the Dawn Age and the Long Night comes from accounts set down by septons thousands of years later. There are archmaesters at the Citadel who question all of it. Those old histories are full of kings who reigned for hundreds of years and knights riding around 1,000 years before there were knights. You know the tales. Brandon the Builder, Simeon Star-Eyes, Knight's King. We say that you're the 998th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, but the oldest list I've found shows 674 commanders, which suggests that it was written during long ago, John broke in. What about the others? I found mention of Dragonglass. The children of the forest used to give the Night's Watch 100 obsidian daggers every year during the Age of Heroes. The others come when it is cold, most of the tales agree, or else it gets cold when they come. Sometimes they appear during snowstorms and melt away when the sky is clear. They hide from the light of the sun and emerge by night, or else night falls when they emerge. Some stories speak of them riding the corpses of dead animals, bears, direwolves, mammoths, horses. It makes no matter, so long as the beast is dead. The one that killed Small Paul was riding a dead horse, so that part's plainly true. Some accounts speak of giant ice spiders, too. I don't know what those are. Men who fall in battle against the others must be burned, or else the dead will rise again as their thralls. We knew all this. The question is, how do we fight them? The armor of the others is proof against most ordinary blades, if the tales can be believed, said Sam, and their own swords are so cold they shatter steel. Fire will dismay them, though, and they are vulnerable to obsidian. He remembered the one he had faced in the haunted forest and how it had seemed to melt away when he stabbed it with the dragon glass dagger John had made for him. I found one account of the Long Night that spoke of the last hero slaying others with a blade of dragon steel. Supposedly they could not stand against it. Dragon steel? John frowned. Valyrian steel? That was my first thought as well. So if I can just convince the lords of the Seven Kingdoms to give us their Valyrian blades, all is saved. That won't be hard. His laugh had no mirth in it. Did you find who the others are, where they come from, what they want? Not yet, my lord, but it may be that I've just been reading the wrong books. There are hundreds I have not looked at yet. Give me more time, and I will find whatever there is to be found. There is no more time. John sounded sad. You need to get your things together, Sam. You're going with Gilly.
Going?
For a moment, Sam did not understand.
I'm going.
To Eastwatch, my lord?
Or where am I?
Old Town.
Old Town?
It came out in a squeak. Horn Hill was close to Old Town.
Home.
The notion made him light-headed.
My father.
Aemon as well.
Aemon? Maester Aemon? But he's 102 years old, my lord. He can't... You're sending him and me? Who will tend the ravens? If they're sick or wounded, who...
Clytus. He's been with Aemon for years.
Clytus is only a steward, and his eyes are going bad. You need a maester. Maester Aemon is so frail. A sea voyage. He thought of the arbor and the arbor queen and almost choked on his tongue. It might... He's old and...
His life will be at risk. I am aware of that, Sam, but the risk is greater here. Stannis knows who Aemon is. If the Red Woman requires King's blood for her spells.
Oh.
Sam paled.
Darian will join you at Eastwatch. My hope is that his songs will win some men for us in the south. The Blackbird will deliver you to Braavos. From there you'll arrange your own passage to Old Town. If you still mean to claim Gilly's babe as your bastard, send her and the child on to Horn Hill. Elsewise, Aemon will find a servant's place for her at the Citadel.
My bastard?
He had said that, yes, but...
All that water. I could drown. Ships sink all the time, and autumn is a stormy season.
Gilly would be with him, though, and the babe would grow up safe.
Yes, I... My mother and my sisters will help Gilly with the child. I can send a letter. I won't need to go to Horn Hill myself.
Darian could see her to Old Town just as well as me. I've been working at my archery every afternoon with Ulmer as you commanded. Well, except when I'm in the vaults. But you told me to find out about the others. The longbow makes my shoulders ache and raises blisters on my fingers. He showed John where one had burst. I still do it, though. I can hit the targets more often than not now, but I'm still the worst archer who ever bent a bow.
I like Ulmer's stories, though. Someone needs to write them down and put them in a book.
You do it. They have parchment and ink at the Citadel as well as longbows. I will expect you to continue with your practice. Sam, the Night's Watch has hundreds of men who can loose an arrow, but only a handful who can read or write. I need you to become my new maester. The word made him flinch.
No, father, please. I won't speak of it again. I swear it by the seven. Let me out, please, let me out. My lord, my work is here. The books
will be here when you return to us. Sam put a hand to his throat. He could almost feel the chain there choking him.
My lord, the Citadel, they make you cut up corpses there.
They make you wear a chain about your neck. If it is change you want, come with me. For 3 days and three nights, Sam had sobbed himself to sleep, manacled hand and foot to a wall. The chain around his throat was so tight it broke the skin, and whenever he rolled the wrong way in his sleep, it would cut off his breath.
I cannot wear a chain.
You can. You will. Maester Aemon is old and blind. His strength is leaving him. Who will take his place when he dies? Maester Mullin at the Shadow Tower is more fighter than scholar, and Maester Harmoon of Eastwatch is drunk more than he's sober.
If you ask the Citadel for more maesters...
I mean to. We'll have need of every one. Aemon Targaryen is not so easily replaced, however. John seemed puzzled. I was certain this would please you. There are so many books at the Citadel that no man can hope to read them all. You would do well there, Sam.
I know you would. No, I could read the books, but Maester must be a healer, and blood makes me faint.
He held out a shaky hand for John to see.
I'm Sam the Scared, not Sam the Slayer.
Scared? Of what? The chidings of old men? Sam,
You saw the whites come swarming up the fist, a tide of living dead men with black hands and bright blue eyes. You slew an other.
It was the Dragonglass, not me.
Be quiet. You lied and schemed and plotted to make me Lord Commander. You will obey me. You'll go to the Citadel and forge a chain, and if you have to cut up corpses, so be it. At least in Old Town, the corpses won't object.
He doesn't understand.
My lord, Sam said, my father, Lord Randall, the life of a maester is a life of servitude.
He was babbling, he knew.
No son of House Tarly will ever wear a chain. The men of Hornhill do not bow and scrape to petty lords.
If it is chains you want, come with me.
John, I cannot disobey my father.
John, he'd said, but John was gone. It was Lord Snow who faced him now, grey eyes as hard as ice. You have no father, said Lord Snow. Only brothers, only us. Your life belongs to the Night's Watch, so go and stuff your small clothes into a sack, along with anything else you care to take to Old Town. You leave an hour before sunrise, and here's another order. From this day forth you will not call yourself a craven. You've faced more things this past year than most men face in a lifetime. You can face the Citadel, but you'll face it as a sworn brother of the Night's Watch. I can't command you to be brave, but I can command you to hide your fears. You said the words, Sam. Remember?
I am the sword in the darkness.
But he was wretched with the sword, and the darkness scared him.
I'll try.
You won't try. You will obey.
Obey!
Mormont's raven flapped its great black wings.
As my lord commands. Does Maester Aemon know?
It was as much his idea as mine. John opened the door for him. No farewells. The fewer folk who know of this, the better. An hour before first light, by the lich yard. Sam did not recall leaving the armory. The next thing he knew, he was stumbling through mud and patches of old snow toward Maester Aemon's chambers.
I could hide, he told himself. I could hide in the vaults, amongst the books.
I could live down there with the mouse, and sneak up at night to steal food.
Crazed thoughts he knew, as futile as they were desperate. The vaults were the first place they would look for him. The last place they would look for him was beyond the wall, but that was even madder. The wildlings would catch me and kill me slowly. They might burn me alive, the way the Red Woman means to burn Mance Rayder. When he found Maester Aemon in the rookery, he gave him John's letter and blurted out his fears in a great green gush of words.
He does not understand.
Sam felt as if he might throw up.
If I don a chain, my lord father,
My own father raised the same objections when I chose a life of service, the old man said. It was his father who sent me to the Citadel. King Daron had sired 4 sons, and 3 had sons of their own. Too many dragons are as dangerous as too few. I heard his grace tell my lord father the day they sent me off.
Aemon raised a spotted hand to the chain of many metals that dangled loose about his thin neck.
The chain is heavy, Sam, but my grandsire had the right of it. So does your lord Snow.
Snow,
a raven muttered.
Snow,
another echoed. All of them picked it up then.
Snow, 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 snow.
Sam had taught them that word. There was no help here, he saw. Maester Aemon was as trapped as he was.
He will die at sea, he thought, despairing. He is too old to survive such a voyage. Gilly's little son may die as well. He's not as large and strong as Dalla's boy. Does John mean to kill us all?
The next morning, Sam found himself saddling the mare he'd ridden from Hornhill and leading her toward the lich yard beside the eastern road. Her saddlebags bulged with cheese and sausages and hard-cooked eggs and half-assaulted ham that Three-Finger Hob had given him on his name day.
"You're a man who appreciates cooking, Slayer," the cook had said. "We need more of your sort."
The ham would help, no doubt. Eastwatch was a long, cold ride away, and there were no towns nor inns in the shadow of the wall. The hour before dawn was dark and still. Castle Black seemed strangely hushed. At the lich yard, a pair of two-wheeled wains awaited him, along with Black Jack Bulwer and a dozen seasoned rangers, tough as the garrons they rode. Kedge Whiteye cursed loudly when his one good eye spied Sam.
"Don't mind him, Slayer," said Black Jack. "He lost a wager. Said we'd need to drag you out squealing from beneath some bed."
Maester Aemon was too frail to ride a horse, so a wain had been made ready for him, its bed heaped high with furs, and a leather awning fastened overhead to keep off the rain and snow. Gilly and her child would ride with him. The second wain would carry their clothing and possessions along with a chest of rare old books that Aemon thought the citadel might lack. Sam had spent half the night searching for them, though he'd found only one in four. And a good thing, or we'd need another wain. When the maester appeared, he was bundled up in a bearskin three times his size. As Clydus led him toward the wain, a gust of wind came up, and the old man staggered. Sam hurried to his side and put an arm about him. Another gust like that could blow him over the wall. "Keep hold of my arm, maester. It's not far." The blind man nodded as the wind pushed back their hoods. "It is always warm in Old Town. There is an inn on an island in the Honeywine where I used to go when I was a young novice. It will be pleasant to sit there once again sipping cider." By the time they got the maester into the wain, Gilly had appeared, the child bundled in her arms. Beneath her hood her eyes were red from crying. John turned up at the same time with Dolorous Ed.
"Lord Snow," Maester Aemon called, "I left a book for you in my chambers, the Jade Compendium. It was written by the Volantine adventurer Coloquo Votar, who travelled to the east and visited all the lands of the Jade Sea. There is a passage you might find of interest. I've told Clydus to mark it for you."
"I'll be sure to read it," John Snow replied. A line of pale snot ran from Maester Aemon's nose. He wiped it away with the back of his glove.
"Knowledge is a weapon, John. Arm yourself well before you ride forth to battle."
"I will." A light snow had begun to fall, the big soft flakes drifting down lazily from the sky. John turned to Black Jack Bulwer. "Make as good a time as you can, but take no foolish risks. You have an old man and a suckling babe with you. See that you keep them warm and well fed."
"You do the same, my lord," said Gilly. "You do the same for T'other. Find another wet nurse, like you said. You promised me you would. The boy, Dalla's boy, the little prince, I mean. You find him some good woman, so he grows up big and strong."
"You have my word," John Snow said solemnly.
"Don't you name him. Don't you do that till he's past 2 years. It's ill luck to name them when they're still on the breast. You crows may not know that, but it's true."
"As you command, my lady." A spasm of anger flashed across Gilly's face.
"Don't you call me that. I'm a mother, not a lady. I'm Craster's wife and Craster's daughter and a mother."
Dolorous Ed took the babe as Gilly climbed into the wain and covered her legs with some musty pelts. By then the eastern sky was more grey than black. Left-hand Lou was anxious to be off. Ed handed the infant up and Gilly put him to her breast.
"This may be the last I ever see of Castle Black,"
thought Sam, as he hoisted himself atop his mare. As much as he had once hated Castle Black, it was tearing him apart to leave it.
"Let's do this," Bulwer commanded.
A whip snapped, and the wains began to rumble slowly down the rutted road as the snow came down around them. Sam lingered beside Clydus and Dolorous Ed and John Snow.
"Well," he said, "farewell."
"And to you, Sam," said Dolorous Ed. "Your boat's not like to sink, I don't think. Boats only sink when I'm aboard."
John was watching the wains.
"The first time I saw Gilly," he said, "she was pressed back against the wall of Craster's Keep, this skinny, dark-haired girl with her big belly cringing away from Ghost.
He had gotten in among her rabbits, and I think she was frightened that he would tear her open and devour the babe. But it was not the wolf she should have been afraid of, was it? No, Sam thought. Craster was the danger, her own father. She has more courage than she knows. So do you, Sam. Have a swift, safe voyage and take care of her and Damon and the child. John smiled a strange, sad smile. And pull your hood up. The snowflakes are melting in your hair.
The second day of the tourney was overcast, with a gusty wind blowing from the west. The crowd should be less on a day like this, Dunk thought. It would have been easier for them to find a spot near the fence to see the jousting up close. Egg might have sat on the rail while I stood behind him. Instead, Egg would have a seat in the viewing box, dressed in silks and furs, while Dunk's view would be limited to the four walls of the tower cell where Lord Ashford's men had confined him. The chamber had a window, but it faced in the wrong direction. Even so, Dunk crammed himself into the window seat as the sun came up and stared gloomily off across town and field and forest. They had taken his hempen sword belt and his sword and dagger with it, and they had taken his silver as well. He hoped Egg or Raymond would remember Chestnut and Thunder. Egg, he muttered low under his breath, his squire, a poor lad plucked from the streets of King's Landing. Had ever a knight been made such a fool? Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall and slow as an oryx. He had not been permitted to speak to Egg since Lord Ashford's soldiers had scooped them all up at the puppet show. Nor Raymond, nor Tansel, nor anyone, not even Lord Ashford himself. He wondered if he would ever see any of them again. For all he knew, they meant to keep him in this small room until he died. What did I think would happen? He asked himself bitterly. I knocked down a prince's son and kicked him in the face. Beneath these gray skies, the flowing finery of the highborn lords and great champions would not seem quite so splendid as it had the day before. The sun, walled behind the clouds, would not brush their steel helms with brilliance, nor make their gold and silver chasings glitter and flash. But even so, Dunk wished he were in the crowd to watch the jousting. It would be a good day for hedge knights, for men in plain mail on unbarded horses. He could hear them, at least. The horns of the heralds carried well, and from time to time a roar from the crowd told him that someone had fallen, or risen, or done something especially bold. He heard faint hoofbeats, too, and once in a great while the clash of swords or the snap of a lance. Dunk winced whenever he heard that last. It reminded him of the noise Tansel's finger had made when Arion broke it. There were other sounds, too, closer at hand. Footfalls in the hall outside his door, the stamp of hooves in the yard below, shouts and voices from the castle walls. Sometimes they drowned out the tourney. Dunk supposed that was just as well.
A hedge knight is the truest kind of knight, Dunk,
the old man had told him a long, long time ago.
Other knights serve the lords who keep them, or from whom they hold their lands, but we serve where we will, for men whose causes we believe in. Every knight swears to protect the weak and innocent, but we keep the vow best, I think.
Queer how strong that memory seemed. Dunk had quite forgotten those words, and perhaps the old man had as well, toward the end. The morning turned to afternoon. The distant sounds of the tourney began to dwindle and die. Dusk began to seep into the cell, but Dunk still sat in the window seat, looking out on the gathering dark and trying to ignore his empty belly. And then he heard footsteps and a jangling of iron keys. He uncoiled and rose to his feet as the door opened. Two guards pushed in, one bearing an oil lamp. A serving man followed with a tray of food. Behind came Egg.
Leave the lamp and the food and go,
the boy told them. They did as he commanded, though Dunk noticed that they left the heavy wooden door ajar. The smell of the food made him realize how ravenous he was. There was hot bread and honey, a bowl of peas porridge, a skewer of roast onions and well-charred meat. He sat by the tray, pulled apart the bread with his hands, and stuffed some into his mouth. There's no knife, he observed. Did they think I'd stab you, boy?
They didn't tell me what they thought.
Egg wore a close-fitting black wool doublet with a tucked waist and long sleeves lined with red satin. Across his chest was sewn the three-headed dragon of House Targaryen.
My uncle says I must humbly beg your forgiveness for deceiving you.
Your uncle? Said Dunk.
That would be Prince Baylor.
The boy looked miserable.
I never meant to lie. But you did. About everything, starting with your name. I never heard of a Prince Egg. It's short for Aegon. My brother Aemon named me Egg. He's off at the Citadel now, learning to be a maester. And Daeron sometimes calls me Egg as well. So do my sisters.
Dunk lifted the skewer and bit into a chunk of meat. Goat, flavored with some lordly spice he'd never tasted before. Grease ran down his chin.
Aegon, he repeated. Of course it would be Aegon. Like Aegon the Dragon. How many Aegons have been king? Four,
the boy said.
Four Aegons.
Dunk chewed, swallowed, and tore off some more bread.
Why did you do it? Was it some jape to make a fool of the stupid hedge knight? No.
The boy's eyes filled with tears, but he stood there manfully.
I was supposed to squire for Daeron. He's my oldest brother. I learned everything I had to learn to be a good squire, but Daeron isn't a very good knight. He didn't want to ride in the tourney, so after we left Summerhall he stole away from our escort. Only instead of doubling back, he went straight on toward Ashford, thinking they'd never look for us that way. It was him shaved my head. He knew my father would send men hunting us. Daeron has common hair, sort of a pale brown, nothing special. But mine is like Arian's, and my father's.
The blood of the dragon, Dunk said. Silver gold hair and purple eyes. Everyone knows that. Thick as a castle wall, Dunk.
Yes, so Daeron shaved it off. He meant for us to hide until the tourney was over. Only then you took me for a stable boy and...
He lowered his eyes.
I didn't care if Daeron fought or not, but I wanted to be somebody's squire. I'm sorry, sir. I truly am.
Dunk looked at him thoughtfully. He knew what it was like to want something so badly that you would tell a monstrous lie just to get near it.
I thought you were like me, he said. Might be you are. Only not the way I thought. We're both from King's Landing still,
the boy said hopefully. Dunk had to laugh.
Yes, you from the top of Aegon's Hill and me from the bottom. That's not so far, sir.
Dunk took a bite from an onion. Do I need to call you my lord or your grace or something?
At court,
the boy admitted.
But other times, you can keep on calling me Egg if you like, sir.
What will they do with me, Egg?
My uncle wants to see you after you're done eating, sir.
Dunk shoved the platter aside and stood.
I'm done now, then. I've already kicked one prince in the mouth. I don't mean to keep another waiting.
Lord Ashford had turned his own chambers over to Prince Baylor for the duration of his stay, so it was to the Lord Solar that Aegon, he would have to get used to that, conducted him. Baylor sat reading by the light of a beeswax candle. Dunk knelt before him.
Rise, the prince said. Would you care for wine?
As it please you, your grace.
Pour Sir Duncan a cup of the sweet Dornish red, Aegon, the prince commanded. Try not to spill it on him. You've done him sufficient ill already.
The boy won't spill, your grace, said Dunk. He's a good boy, a good squire, and he meant no harm to me, I know.
One need not intend harm to do it. Aegon should have come to me when he saw what his brother was doing to those puppeteers. Instead, he ran to you. That was no kindness. What you did, sir? Well, I might have done the same in your place, but I am a prince of the realm, not a hedge knight. It is never wise to strike a king's grandson in anger, no matter the cause.
Dunk nodded grimly. Egg offered him a silver goblet brimming with wine. He accepted it and took a long swallow.
I hate Arian,
Egg said with vehemence.
And I had to run for Sir Duncan, uncle. The castle was too far.
Arian is your brother, the prince said firmly. and the Septims say we must love our brothers. Aegon, leave us now. I would speak with Sir Duncan privately.
The boy put down the flagon of wine and bowed stiffly.
As you will, Your Grace.
He went to the door of the solar and closed it softly behind him. Baylor Breakspear studied Dunk's eyes for a long moment.
Sir Duncan, let me ask you this. How good a knight are you, truly? How skilled at arms?
Dunk did not know what to say.
Sir Arlen taught me sword and shield and how to tilt at rings and quintons.
Prince Baylor seemed troubled by that answer.
My brother Makar returned to the castle a few hours ago. He found his heir drunk in an inn a day's ride to the south. Makar would never admit as much, but I believe it was his secret hope that his sons might outshine mine in this tourney. Instead, they have both shamed him. But what is he to do? They are blood of his blood. Makar is angry, and must needs have a target for his wrath. He has chosen you.
Me?
Dunk said miserably.
Arion has already filled his father's ear, and Daeron has not helped you either. To excuse his own cowardice, he told my brother that a huge robber knight, chance met on the road, made off with Aegon. I fear you have been cast as this robber knight, sir. In Daeron's tale, he has spent all these days pursuing you hither and yon to win back his brother.
But Egg will tell him the truth. Aegon, I mean.
Egg will tell him, I have no doubt, said Prince Baylor. But the boy has been known to lie, too, as you have good reason to recall. Which son will my brother believe? As for the matter of these puppeteers, by the time Arion is done twisting the tail, it will be high treason. The dragon is the sigil of the royal house. To portray one being slain, sawdust blood spilling from its neck. Well, it was doubtless innocent, but it was far from wise. Arion calls it a veiled attack on House Targaryen, an incitement to revolt. Makar will likely agree. My brother has a prickly nature, and he has placed all his best hopes on Arion, since Daeron has been such a grave disappointment to him.
The prince took a sip of wine, then set the goblet aside.
Whatever my brother believes or fails to believe, one truth is beyond dispute. You laid hands upon the blood of the dragon. For that offense, you must be tried and judged and punished.
Punished?
Dunk did not like the sound of that.
Arion would like your head, with or without teeth. He will not have it, I promise you, but I cannot deny him a trial. As my royal father is hundreds of leagues away, my brother and I must sit in judgment of you along with Lord Ashford, whose domains these are, and Lord Tyrell of Highgarden, his liege lord. The last time a man was found guilty of striking one of royal blood, it was decreed that he should lose the offending hand.
My hand?
Said Dunk, aghast.
And your foot. You kicked him too, did you not?
Dunk could not speak.
To be sure, I will urge my fellow judges to be merciful. I am the king's hand and the heir to the throne. My word carries some weight. But so does my brother's. The risk is there.
Your Grace,
They meant no treason. It was only a wooden dragon. It was never meant to be a royal prince, he wanted to say, but his words had deserted him once and all. He had never been any good with words. You have another choice, though, Prince Baylor said quietly. Whether it is a better choice or a worse one, I cannot say, but I remind you that any knight accused of a crime has the right to demand trial by combat. So I ask you once again, Sir Duncan the Tall, how good a knight are you? Truly.
A trial of seven, said Prince Arion, smiling. That is my right, I do believe.
Prince Baylor drummed his fingers on the table, frowning. To his left, Lord Ashford nodded slowly.
Why?
Prince Makar demanded, leaning forward toward his son.
Are you afraid to face this hedge knight alone, and let the gods decide the truth of your accusations?
Afraid? Said Arion. Of such as this? Don't be absurd, father. My thought is for my beloved brother. Daeron has been wronged by this Sir Duncan as well. and has first claim to his blood. A trial of 7 allows us both to face him.
Do me no favors, brother, muttered Daeron Targaryen. The eldest son of Prince Maegar looked even worse than he had when Dunk had encountered him in the inn. He seemed to be sober this time, his red and black doublet unstained by wine, but his eyes were bloodshot, and a fine sheen of sweat covered his brow.
I am content to cheer you on as you slay the rogue.
You are too kind, sweet brother, said Prince Arion, all smiles. But it would be selfish of me to deny you the right to prove the truth of your words at the hazard of your body. I must insist upon a trial of 7.
Dunk was lost.
Your graces, my lords, he said to the dais. I do not understand. What is this trial of 7?
Prince Baylor shifted uncomfortably in his seat.
It is another form of trial by combat, ancient, seldom invoked. It came across the narrow sea with the Andals and their 7 gods. In any trial by combat, the accuser and the accused are asking the gods to decide the issue between them. The Andals believe that if the 7 champions fought on each side, the gods, being thus honored, would be more like to take a hand and see that a just result was achieved.
Or mayhap they simply had a taste for swordplay,
said Lord Leo Tyrell, a cynical smile touching his lips.
Regardless, Sir Arion is within his rights. A trial of 7, it must be.
I must fight 7 men, then?
Dunk asked hopelessly.
Not alone, sir, Prince Maegar said impatiently. Don't play the fool, it will not serve. It must be 7 against 7. You must needs find 6 other knights to fight beside you.
6 knights, Dunk thought.
They might as well have told him to find 6,000. He had no brothers, no cousins, no old comrades who had stood beside him in battle. Why would 6 strangers risk their own lives to defend a hedge knight against 2 royal princelings?
Your graces, my lords, he said. What if no one will take my part?
Maegar Targaryen looked down on him coldly.
If a cause is just, good men will fight for it. If you can find no champion, sir, it will be because you are guilty. Could anything be more plain?
The sun rose hot and hard, implacable. Waves of heat rose shimmering off the white stones of the castle. The air smelled of baked earth and torn grass, and no breath of wind stirred the banners that drooped atop the keep and gatehouse, green and white and yellow. Thunder was restless, in a way that Dunk had seldom seen before. The stallion tossed his head from side to side as Egg was tightening his saddle cinch. He even bared his big square teeth at the boy. It is so hot, Dunk thought. Too hot for man or mount. A warhorse does not have a placid disposition even at the best of times. The mother herself would be foul-tempered in this heat. In the center of the yard, the jousters began another run. Ser Harbert rode a golden courser barded in black and decorated with the red and white serpents of House Page. Ser Franklin, a sorrel whose gray silk trapper bore the twin towers of Frey. When they came together, the red and white lance cracked clean in two, and the blue one exploded into splinters, but neither man lost his seat. A cheer went up from the viewing stand and the guardsmen on the castle walls, but it was short and thin and hollow. It is too hot for cheering. Dunk mopped sweat from his brow. It is too hot for jousting. His head was beating like a drum. Let me win this tilt and one more, and I will be content. The knights wheeled their horses about at the end of the lists and tossed down the jagged remains of their lances, the 4th pair they had broken. 3 too many. Dunk had put off donning his armor as long as he dared, yet already he could feel his small clothes sticking to his skin beneath his steel. There are worse things than being soaked with sweat, he told himself, remembering the fight on the White Lady when the Iron Men had come swarming over her side. He had been soaked in blood by the time that day was done. Fresh lances in hand, Page and Frey put their spurs into their mounts once again. Clods of cracked dry earth sprayed back from beneath their horses' hooves with every stride. The crack of the lances breaking made Dunk wince. Too much wine last night, and too much food. He had some vague memory of carrying the bride up the steps and meeting John the Fiddler and Lord Peak upon a roof. What was I doing on a roof? There had been talk of dragons, he recalled, or dragons' eggs or something, but a noise broke his reverie, part roar and part moan. Dunk saw the golden horse trotting riderless to the end of the lists as Sir Harbert Page rolled feebly on the ground. Two more before my turn. The sooner he unhorsed Sir Uthor, the sooner he could take his armor off, have a cool drink, and rest. He should have at least an hour before they called him forth again. Lord Butterwell's portly herald climbed to the top of the viewing stand to summon the next pair of jousters. "Sir Argrave the Defiant," he called, "a knight of Nunny in service to Lord Butterwell of White Walls. Sir Glendon Flowers, the knight of the Pussy Willows, come forth and prove your valor." A gale of laughter rippled through the viewing stands. Sir Argrave was a spare, leathery man, a seasoned household knight in dinted gray armor, riding an unbarded horse. Dunk had known his sort before. Such men were tough as old roots and knew their business. His foe was young Sir Glendon, mounted on his wretched stot and armored in a heavy mail hauberk and open-faced iron half-helm. On his arm, his shield displayed his father's fiery sigil. "He needs a breastplate and a proper helm," Dunk thought. "A blow to the head or chest could kill him, clad like that." Sir Glendon was plainly furious at his introduction. He wheeled his mount in an angry circle and shouted, "I am Glendon Ball, not Glendon Flowers. Mock me at your peril, herald, I warn you. I have hero's blood." The herald did not deign to reply, but more laughter greeted the young knight's protest. Why are they laughing at him? Dunk wondered aloud. Is he a bastard, then? Flowers was the surname given to bastards born of noble parents in the Reach. And what was all that about pussy willows? "I could find out, sir," said Egg. "No, it is none of our concern. Do you have my helm?" Sir Argrave and Sir Glendon dipped their lances before Lord and Lady Butterwell. Dunk saw Butterwell lean over and whisper something in his bride's ear. The girl began to giggle. "Yes, sir." Egg had donned his floppy hat to shade his eyes and keep the sun off his shaved head. Dunk liked to tease the boy about that hat, but just now he wished he had one like it. Better a straw hat than an iron one beneath this sun. He pushed his hair out of his eyes, eased the great helm down into place with two hands, and fastened it to his gorget. The lining stank of old sweat, and he could feel the weight of all that iron on his neck and shoulders. His head throbbed from last night's wine. "Sir," Egg said, "it's not too late to withdraw. If you lose thunder and your armor..." "I would be done as a knight." "Why should I lose?" Dunk demanded. Sir Argrave and Sir Glendon had ridden to opposite ends of the lists. "It is not as if I faced the laughing storm. Is there some knight here like to give me trouble?"
"Almost all of them, sir."
"I owe you a clout in the ear for that. Sir Uthor is 10 years my senior and half my size."
Sir Argrave lowered his visor. Sir Glendon did not have a visor to lower. "You have not ridden in a tilt since Ashford Meadow, sir."
"Insolent boy. I've trained."
Not so faithfully as he might have, to be sure.
When he could, he took his turn riding at Quinton's or Rings, where such were available. And sometimes he would command Egg to climb a tree and hang a shield or barrel stave beneath a well-placed limb for them to tilt at.
"You're better with a sword than with a lance," Egg said. With an axe or a mace, there's few to match your strength. There was enough truth in that to annoy Dunk all the more.
There is no contest for swords or maces, he pointed out, as Fireball's son and Ser Argrave the Defiant began their charge. Go get my shield. Egg made a face, then went to fetch the shield.
Across the yard, Ser Argrave's lance struck Ser Glendon's shield and glanced off, leaving a gouge across the comet. But Ball's coronal found the center of his foe's breastplate with such force that it burst his saddle cinch. Knight and saddle both went tumbling to the dust. Dunk was impressed, despite himself. The boy jousts almost as well as he talks. He wondered if that would stop them laughing at him. A trumpet rang loud enough to make Dunk wince. Once more, the herald climbed his stand.
Ser Joffrey of House Caswell, Lord of Bitterbridge and Defender of the Fords, Ser Kyle, the Cat of Misty Moor, come forth and prove your valor.
Ser Kyle's armor was of good quality, but old and worn, with many dints and scratches.
The mother has been merciful to me, Ser Duncan, he told Dunk and Egg on his way to the lists. I am sent against Lord Caswell, the very man I came to see.
If any man upon the field felt worse than Dunk this morning, it had to be Lord Caswell, who had drunk himself insensible at the feast. It's a wonder he can sit a horse after last night, said Dunk.
The victory is yours, Ser. Oh, no!
Ser Kyle smiled a silken smile.
The cat who wants his bowl of cream must know when to purr and when to show his claws, Ser Duncan. If his lordship's lance so much as scrapes against my shield, I shall go tumbling to the earth. Afterwards, when I bring my horse and armor to him, I will compliment his lordship on how much his prowess has grown since I made him his first sword. That will recall me to him. And before this day is out, I shall be a Caswell man again, a knight of Bitterbridge.
There is no honor in that, Dunk almost said, but he bit his tongue instead. Ser Kyle would not be the first hedge knight to trade his honor for a warm place by the fire.
As you say, he muttered, good fortune to you, or bad if you prefer.
Lord Joffrey Caswell was a weedy youth of 20, though admittedly he looked rather more impressive in his armor than he had last night when he'd been face down in a puddle of wine. A yellow centaur was painted on his shield, pulling on a longbow. The same centaur adorned the white silk trappings of his horse and gleamed atop his helm in yellow gold.
A man who has a centaur for his sigil should ride better than that.
Dunk did not know how well Ser Kyle wielded a lance, but from the way Lord Caswell sat his horse, it looked as though a loud cough might unseat him. All the cat need do is ride past him very fast. Egg held Thunder's bridle as Dunk swung himself ponderously up into the high, stiff saddle. As he sat there waiting, he could feel the eyes upon him. They are wondering if the big hedge knight is any good. Dunk wondered that himself. He would find out soon enough. The Cat of Misty Moor was true to his word. Lord Caswell's lance was wobbling all the way across the field, and Ser Kyle's was ill-aimed. Neither man got his horse up past a trot. All the same, the cat went tumbling when Lord Joffrey's coronal chanced to whack his shoulder. I thought all cats landed gracefully upon their feet, Dunk thought as the hedge knight rolled in the dust. Lord Caswell's lance remained unbroken. As he brought his horse around, he thrust it high into the air repeatedly, as if he'd just unseated Leo Longthorn or the Laughing Storm. The cat pulled off his helm and went chasing down his horse.
My shield, Dunk said to Egg.
The boy handed it up. He slipped his left arm through the strap and closed his hand around the grip. The weight of the kite shield was reassuring, though its length made it awkward to handle, and seeing the hanged man once again gave him an uneasy feeling. Those are ill-omened arms. He resolved to get the shield repainted as soon as he could. "May the warrior grant me a smooth course and a quick victory," he prayed, as Butterwell's herald was clambering up the steps once more. "Ser Uthor Underleaf," his voice rang out, "the Gallows Knight, come forth and prove your valor." "Be careful, Ser," Egg warned as he handed Dunk a tourney lance, a tapered wooden shaft 12 feet long, ending in a rounded iron coronal in the shape of a closed fist. "The other squires say Ser Uthor has a good seat, and he's quick."
"Quick?" Dunk snorted. "He has a snail on his shield. How quick can he be?"
He put his heels into Thunder's flanks and walked the horse slowly forward, his lance upright. "One victory and I am no worse than before. Two will leave us well ahead. Two is not too much to hope for in this company." He had been fortunate in the lots, at least. He could as easily have drawn the old ox or Ser Kirby Pym or some other local hero. Dunk wondered if the Master of Games was deliberately matching the hedge knights against each other, so no lordling need suffer the ignominy of losing to one in the first round. "It does not matter. One foe at a time, that was what the old man always said. Ser Uthor is all that should concern me now." They met beneath the viewing stand, where Lord and Lady Butterwell sat on their cushions in the shade of the castle walls. Lord Frey was beside them, dandling his snot-nosed son on one knee. A row of serving girls was fanning them, yet Lord Butterwell's damask tunic was stained beneath the arms, and his lady's hair was limp from perspiration. She looked hot, bored, and uncomfortable, but when she saw Dunk, she pushed out her chest in a way that turned him red beneath his helm. He dipped his lance to her and her lord husband. Ser Uthor did the same. Butterwell wished them both a good tilt. His wife stuck out her tongue. It was time. Dunk trotted back to the south end of the lists. 80 feet away, his opponent was taking up his position as well. His gray stallion was smaller than Thunder, but younger and more spirited. Ser Uthor wore green enamel plate and silvery chainmail. Streamers of green and gray silk flowed from his rounded bassinet, and his green shield bore a silver snail. "Good armor and a good horse means a good ransom if I unseat him." A trumpet sounded. Thunder started forward at a slow trot. Dunk swung his lance to the left and brought it down so it angled across the horse's head and the wooden barrier between him and his foe. His shield protected the left side of his body. He crouched forward, legs tightening as Thunder drove down the lists. "We are one. Man, horse, lance. We are one beast of blood and wood and iron." Ser Uthor was charging hard, clouds of dust kicking up from the hooves of his gray. With 40 yards between them, Dunk spurred Thunder to a gallop and aimed the point of his lance squarely at the silver snail. The sullen sun, the dust, the heat, the castle, Lord Butterwell and his bride, the fiddler and Ser Maynard, knights, squires, grooms, small folk, all vanished. Only the foe remained. The spurs again. Thunder broke into a run. The snail was rushing toward them, growing with every stride of the gray's long legs. But ahead came Ser Uthor's lance with its iron fist. "My shield is strong. My shield will take the blow. Only the snail matters. Strike the snail and the tilt is mine." When 10 yards remained between them, Ser Uthor shifted the point of his lance upward. A crack rang in Dunk's ears as his lance hit. He felt the impact in his arm and shoulder, but never saw the blow strike home. Uthor's iron fist took him square between his eyes with all the force of man and horse behind it.
"Don't drink the wine, sir," Egg whispered to him as they waited with the septon in her audience chamber. The stone floors were covered with sweet-smelling rushes, the walls hung with tapestries of tourney scenes and battles. Doug snorted. She has no need to poison me, he whispered back. She thinks I'm some great lout with peas porridge between his ears, you mean. As it happens, my good sister likes peas porridge, said Septon Sefton, as he reappeared with a flagon of wine, a flagon of water, and three cups. Yes, yes, I heard. I'm fat, not deaf. He filled two cups with wine and one with water. The third he gave to Egg, who gave it a long, dubious look and put it aside. The Septon took no notice. This is an Arbor vintage, he was telling Dunk. Very fine, and the poison gives it a special piquance. He winked at Egg. I seldom touch the grape myself, but I have heard. He handed Dunk a cup. The wine was lush and sweet, but Dunk sipped it gingerly, and only after the Septon had quaffed down half of his in three big, lip-smacking gulps. Egg crossed his arms and continued to ignore his water. She does like peas porridge, the Septon said, and you as well, sir. I know my own good sister. When I first saw you in the yard, I half hoped you were some suitor, come from King's Landing to seek my lady's hand. Dunk furrowed his brow. How did you know I was from King's Landing, Septon? King's Landers have a certain way of speaking. The Septon took a gulp of wine, sloshed it about his mouth, swallowed, and sighed with pleasure. I have served there many years, attending our High Septon in the great Sept of Baelor, he sighed. You would not know the city since the spring. The fires changed it. A quarter of the house is gone, and another quarter empty. The rats are gone as well. That is the queerest thing. I never thought to see a city without rats. Dunk had heard that too. Were you there during the great spring sickness? Oh, indeed. A dreadful time, sir, dreadful. Strong men would wake healthy at the break of day and be dead by evenfall. So many died so quickly there was no time to bury them. They piled them in the dragon pit instead, and when the corpses were 10 feet deep, Lord Rivers commanded the pyromancers to burn them. The light of the fires shone through the windows, as it did of yore when living dragons still nested beneath the dome. By night you could see the glow all through the city, the dark green glow of wildfire. The colour green still haunts me to this day. They say the spring was bad in Lannisport and worse in Old Town, but in King's Landing it cut down 4 of 10. Neither young nor old were spared, nor rich nor poor, nor great nor humble. Our good High Septon was taken, the God's own voice on earth, with a third of the most devout and nearly all our silent sisters. His Grace King Darren, sweet Mataris, and bold Vela the Hand, oh, it was a dreadful time. By the end, half the city was praying to the stranger. He had another drink. And where were you, sir? In Dorne, said Dunk. Thank the mother for her mercy, then. The great spring sickness had never come to Dorne, perhaps because the Dornish had closed their borders and their ports, as had the Aerins of the Vale, who had also been spared. All this talk of death is enough to put a man off wine, but cheer is hard to come by in such times as we are living. The drought endures for all our prayers. The King's Wood is one great tinderbox, and fires rage there night and day. Bitter Steel and the Sons of Daemon Blackfire are hatching plots in Tyrosh, and Dagon Greyjoy's Krakens prowl the sunset sea like wolves, raiding as far south as the Arbor. They carried off half the wealth of Fair Isle, it's said, and 100 women, too. Lord Farman is repairing his defences, though that strikes me as akin to the man who claps his pregnant daughter in a chastity belt when her belly's big as mine. Lord Bracken is dying slowly on the Trident, and his eldest son perished in the spring. That means Sir Otho must succeed. The Blackwoods will never stomach the brute of Bracken as a neighbour. It will mean war. Dunk knew about the ancient enmity between the Blackwoods and the Brackens. Won't their liege lord force a peace? Alas, said Septon Sefton. Lord Tully is a boy of 8, surrounded by women. River Run will do little, and King Aerys will do less. Unless some maester writes a book about it, the whole matter may escape his royal notice. Lord Rivers is not like to let any Brackens in to see him. Pray recall, our hand was born half Blackwood. If he acts at all, it will be only to help his cousins bring the brute to bay. The mother marked Lord Rivers on the day that he was born, and Bitter Steel marked him once again upon the red grass field. Dunk knew he meant Bloodraven. Brynden Rivers was the Hand's true name. His mother had been a Blackwood, his father King Aegon the Fourth. The fat man drank his wine and rattled on. As for Aerys, his grace cares more for old scrolls and dusty prophecies than for lore.